equipment, firefighting equipment, must be made available and be on site, and that there has got to be some form of training and so forth that is spoken about insofar as the inhabitants of the homestead. But however, so it doesn't specify the kind of equipment. And such a function, including specifications, is then left to experts and professionals in terms of how firefighting capability must then be dealt with as identified by a security evaluation report. The second point that we want to make is that there was a concern expressed that the minister in the breakdown of the Minister of Police in the breakdown of the cost factor, for an example, and relevant the allocation, did not said that the 135.2 million is for the barracks only. Now, so we are re-presenting this particular slide because this is a slide that we presented. This thing is not pointing here. Is it? Yeah, okay. We're resubmitting this particular slide because this is exactly the slide that we presented before this ad hoc committee on the 22nd of July. And in it, you have a footnote that says the 135.2 million was for the SAPS and the National Defense Force housing complex, helipad, and clinic. But also in the body of the report that we presented. Oh, thank you very much. But also in the report, and this is much more better, thank you. In the report, in the body of the report, we also alluded to the fact that this amount is also inclusive of consultancy and professional fees. This is exactly the slide that we presented. But also, further down, in the same presentation that we made on the 22nd of July, we also zoomed into this one. And clearly, in the delineation of this aerial map, we showed that the purple outline identifies the state properties adjacent to the presidential homestead. So in other words, the housing complex there is for the South African Police Service as well as the National Defense Force, but so is your helipad as well as your clinic. Now, those are the facilities that essentially belong to the state. So this is the same slide that we also presented in the meeting of the 22nd. So if there are further concerns on this question, I would suggest that we go back to this particular presentation that we made before the Ad Hoc Committee visited the private residence. Now, it has also been widely reported, this is the third area, but it has been widely reported, for an example, that the President instructed the South African Police Service for the barracks to be constructed. And the point of reference here is the Senior Superintendent S.F. Linde of the South African Police Service, and he is the chair of the Building Planning Committee. And the letter that is quoted is, in terms of paragraph 2 of that letter, states, I quote, by instruction of the President, of the State President, President Zuma, the existing house at Inganga currently accommodate SAPS members must be converted as part of the President's household. Now, close quote, sorry. Let me just state, a senior superintendent is no position that can be referred to as a senior police official, for instance, in the police service. In normal civil service terms, under normal circumstances, a senior superintendent is a level of a deputy director. director and a director general, the honorable members, at three levels in between. You have a director, you have a chief director, you have a deputy director general. It would be quite puzzling that you would have a head of state instructing a deputy director who is six or seven levels below to then undertake this particular instruction. It would be a very puzzling kind of a situation in the first instance. That's one thing. Now, but you should also take note that this very same matter is dealt with by the Special Investigation Unit in its report, page 202, paragraph 41, amongst other things. But also, broadly speaking, in that very same report, states that the SIU interviewed Senior Superintendent Linde, who stated that these were his own words and not of the President, which means that he was not being truthful when he wrote, quote unquote, by the instruction of the President. This was, by his own account, an invention. Now, this is a matter of public record. It's official. The Special Investigation Report of the SIU dealt with this particular issue. The member in question was interviewed, and this was a matter that was firmly established. And also, interestingly, in the same report, the SIU makes interesting observations. One observation that it makes is that there appears to be, I quote from that report, that there appears to be a disturbing tendency to invoke the name of the President to move the project along and to influence decisions, close quote. And the report of the SIU, the investigation report of the SIU, further opines that, I quote, the direct involvement of these persons, by, of course, implying the then ministers of the National Department of Public Works, was used by officials as a means to support or push through what they, in other words, the officials themselves, wanted, close quote. Again, the point of reference here is also the SIU investigation report pertaining to the Inkandla project. But the same, what also is not being stated or reported on or about, is that the same letter, the Linde letter, for an example, contains an attachment with a revised SAPS request which converses the following: that 14 bachelor flats be constructed, a control room be constructed, park homes be made available, two offices, the lockup garage for a lockup garage for 12 vehicles, guard houses, landscaping, etc. This is contained also in the same letter by the senior superintendent, Linde. Now, and this clarifies one question. The complex of what is now known as the 20 houses plus one, were requested by the South African Police Service and the National Defense Force. Now, in the records, you will see that, for instance, before this request for 14 bachelor flats was made by the South African Police Service, there was a request of 6 bachelor flats that was requested by the National Defense Force. So that number tallies to add up to units of 20. We then move on to the issue pertaining to the SAPS, the National Defense Force, the barracks. Firstly, that the land adjacent to that occupied by the President, wherein the SAPS and the National Defense Force barracks are located and constructed, fall under the KwaZulu-Natal Ingonyama Trust Act number 3 of 1994, with a specific requirement for a proper lease agreement to be entered into. I'm quite certain that the Minister of Public Works will also reflect on this particular question in terms of the accounts, whichever way you look at it, this then draws the line between the property, the facility, the land on which the property is constructed, and it draws the line between those, that and the question of the presidency home. It is also common cause that the barracks were constructed at the instance of the barracks were constructed at the instance of the SAPS, 14 of those as per the Linda letter, and the National Defence Force, 46. And in this regard, it should be noted that such a development, as and when it happens anywhere in the country, is governed by the South African Police Services housing policy, of which allocation is based on merit and not proximity, and at the helm of which is the control of such a allocation by the cluster commander, who appoints an accommodation committee. And it looks into all the sorts of issues for accommodation needs of the police service members and so on. And it is only then that accommodation is then allocated to SAPS members officially. On the issue of the fire pool, the concern was expressed that it appears to be an afterthought. Now, if I can just take members through a particular a process flow of issues in this regard, is that the need for a fire pool appears under letter F of the swimming pool design in the Department of Public Works prestige project, dated to 2009. Apologies, Chair, I'm so zoolized, that's a problem. It appears under that, and that the SAPS Security Evaluation Report dated for 2009 also makes a determination for a requirement for firefighting capability to be on site. The third point is that in the report by Igbomo Consulting CC, the engineer's report, this very same matter also appears that there is a need for a requirement for firefighting, and that the location of the fire pool was determined by practitioners. Now, all members, you went there, and I think most of you have been there, you realize that the location of the fire pool in the first instance is in the southwestern end of the residence, but it's also somewhat at an elevated point, in a sense that that's the location. And I think if you were to talk to practitioners, they would then tell you as to perhaps what was the reasoning for locating it where it is currently located and so on. However, the water pump and appropriate equipment for firefighting could not be procured while the investigation was underway, hence the need for the completion of outstanding work. Now, a number of the investigation reports have alluded to the question of outstanding work that needs the completion. If you were to consult those reports that are at your disposal, in other words, besides the point or the points that have been raised by the Minister of Police in this regard, the issue is that the number of the investigative reports that have dealt with this particular matter, that all of them have concluded and come to this particular point about the need to complete outstanding work. Now, in rounding up these particular responses, the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen, it should be noted that processes are underway in relation to the issue of cost inflation, scope creep, recoveries, and other issues which also the Minister of Public Works, I'm quite certain that in this particular briefing will also allude to. Some of allocation of accommodation for SNPS members from a perspective of its housing policy. And a cluster commander in the responsible or in the relevant jurisdiction will certainly take charge in terms of setting up an accommodation committee of sorts and look and follow the policy guideline in terms of how accommodation is to be allocated to members of the college service. Now, we also do want to reiterate that what has been stated by various investigative reports, a common point of convergence is that outstanding work has got to be completed, and that's a point that we previously touched upon. And that, secondly, security re-evaluation shall be conducted soon by a team of experts from law enforcement agencies. And of course, given what you also have been exposed to, and I think there is a general point of agreement around this particular issue as well, that there has got to be a completion of what is outstanding, but certainly that given the exposure and the extent of the exposure that has been made regarding the president's residence, you certainly have got to deal with the question of security re-evaluation. Now, and that such a process of, you know, in undertaking the above, such a process must strictly adhere to principles of project management, oversight exercise, as well as adherence to applicable prescripts. So I do want to leave it at that, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I will now grant an opportunity to the members of the committee to interact with just a brief presentation that was done by the Minister, the Honourable Kubai, the Honourable Swart, the Honourable Raimane, and then the Honourable Singh, and then we'll have another round.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to Minister Nkeko for the presentation. I think as well, just to indicate from here, even previously, I think this is a report from Minister after presenting. It really assisted us when we went on site because of those outer parameters, and now we could see for ourselves. So it really helped in really doing our work. I just want to go to the issue of Senior Soup Linde, Mr. Nkeko. Just to check in terms, because you've indicated that this is a junior official, and noting what SIU has indicated there in terms of this, because I think more, if indeed wrongdoing was done, if there's been, I think more from the committee, and I'll follow even from what the previous ad hoc committee has been flagging around the issues of consequence management and accountability. Because we've been noting, if you read the report of the ad hoc committee, has noted that there are quite a number of officials that were doing, because we based our analysis on the reports that were before us. And it was very clear, the chair, that quite a number of officials were doing things wrongly. And now, coming to the issue of consequence management, just to check with Mr. Chair, if anything has happened around the senior soup, in light of what he's presenting here today, that he was not a person responsible and who had the authority to operate in that level. If he's a deputy director and therefore giving such an instruction at that level, what has been consequences in that regard? Thanks.
Honourable Scott.
Thank you, Chairperson. And again, our thanks for the visit to General Zuma and Mr. Khadebi for showing us around and the courtesy that was extended to us during our visit. Bearing in mind the President's own security, that we all support, that he does need to have security. And it was very insightful, and as I've indicated, the issue related to escalating costs is something that we will be dealing with the Minister of Public Works and surely workmanship. But that doesn't mean that we from our side support the Minister's report, which would appear to exonerate just reiterate at the outset that the essence, and it's just a caveat again, Chairperson, about our engagement here, that by no means should it be seen that we accept the President's decision to refer the matter to the Minister, because obviously that's a legal argument that one will have at a later stage, and the rationality of that decision. But as it is, we would like to just engage with the Minister, and allow us to start with that letter which I raised with the help of my colleagues from the DA who pointed it out in the first place. That letter has now been confirmed by a spokesperson from the Police Ministry, Mr. Musa Zondi, who said yes, that was an instruction from the President referring to that letter. So it does appear that there was an instruction relating to that one on the article that we saw right at the swimming pool. So, Minister, if you could just clarify that, because it does appear it goes beyond that senior superintendent, and it's now been confirmed that that was an instruction from the President to deal with the first paragraph which related to that one house. Chairperson, secondly then, if one then looks at the subject to interpretation, the upgraded SAPS assessment, and I think this is where the whole problem arose, was when the private contractors came on board and started to usurp the work of Public Works and the SAPS to a certain degree, and we will engage in that to the degree where even you had a contractor writing letters on a Public Works document. And we know the SIU, as you correctly pointed out, Minister, is instituting action in that regard. But let me just give you an example that is referred to, and my concern is we know there's litigation, Chairperson, so we need to be sensitive to what degree we discuss issues, and we need to be guided by you and by legal advisors. But there appears to be a discrepancy between the SIU and the Minister's report, because if you look at the particulars of claim from the Special Investigating Unit on page 207, where there's a claim for 68 million, and it says, in this regard, the particulars of claim note Mr. Makanya, he's the architect, varied the scopes of work and authorized the construction of the following structures which were not security measures, had that been determined. And then he details tunnels, construction of 20 units, visitors' lounge, basement parking, VIP parking, fire pool, relocation of four households, construction of roads, air conditioning. Now this is the unit that has been appointed by the President that indicates, according to this particulars of claim, that they were not security measures. And Minister, you've come back and said they are security measures. So we sit with a bit of a dilemma in that regard. But to illustrate the first point, and Minister, obviously it's difficult to explain because there's pending litigation, and I wouldn't like that litigation to be hard because we're all in agreement that costs were escalated and should be recovered from one instance from the contractors, the architects, and to a lesser degree, we might not be in agreement, but the President to a certain degree. But if you look, tunnels with an exit and three lifts at a cost of 21 million. Now the SAPS said, first a safe haven for the President, when that wasn't after security considerations, they considered a bunker. That was the SAPS. Then the architects came in and then had tunnels with exits and three lifts. So that is the concern with the private contractors that came in and that changed the cost estimate substantially. And would you comment on that cost, dear Minister, because obviously that is a concern. We will be taking that up further with the Minister of Public Works. Then I would ask you, when we were there, we were shown, and the media saw a lot of the security measures are not in place at the moment. And that it must be a concern to all of us if the President's security is not secured totally. And you indicated that there's still work to be done. But according to the documentation, Phase 3 must still be implemented, and that will cost 31 million rand. Are you able to comment on that figure? That is the figure for the finalization. That's the Public Works figure, Phase 3, from Mr. Rindle. And is that, would that be in accordance with your assessment? And then, lastly, Chairperson, I would ask the Minister whether he's been able to study the Public Protector's report. Because what I raised last week is that it is very clear from her report that there is an amount that the president should repay. It's nowhere near the 246 million that people are talking about. But if we look here on paragraph page 63 of her report, where she says, and that one would have thought, Minister, you might have raised with the president when you filed your report, the president did not dispute during the investigation that he told me, that's the public protector, on 11 August 2013, that he requested the building of a larger car and he was willing to reimburse the state the cost thereof. Now, when we were there, we could see the car and we could understand the need to move it for security consideration, but it was much bigger. And here there is evidence that there was a discussion with the president and he was prepared to pay for the increased car. So throughout the public protector's report, there are assertions of discussions with various members, and there was the memo that went missing where we know about the 10 million rand that was initially assessed for the private costs of the president. Now that might be something you can't comment on because it's public works. It was reduced to 3 million. That memo seems to be missing. But the point I want to make in your report, where you've concluded that the president must pay nothing back, it flies directly in the face of the public protector's report. And would you comment on that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Maimane. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the ministers who are here. Firstly, Minister, I think you make a fascinating point to propose that post that the security experts were then the ones who were supposed to determine items such as the form, shape, and character of items such as the fire pool. My challenge is this, is perhaps if you could elaborate for us, Minister, where else has this practice been done? Does every other security project in rural communities naturally assume that if there is pressure issues in terms of the firefighting equipment, that in fact it is the first logical protocol is to build a swimming pool? That what I saw on site at fire hoses that were built, that were attached to the wall, we then asked the honorable firefighters who came to do a demonstration, sadly it lacked a bit of music, but be that as it may, we asked the question, what alternatives could have been there? I must assume you have your experts. I'm asking the people who deal with fire in rural communities generally all the time, what alternatives were there? They said if we were to install a booster that could improve the pressure, we could in fact have taken a different route. Now, I'm fascinated, Minister. So if you can establish for us, and that this practice isn't very common, that there are many other when you talk about a body of water, which I find fascinating. The second point is this, is that for a fire pool, as it's now subsequently been told, and I refuse to use that term because I think we can't be insulted like that. We must rather call it a swimming pool because that's what it is. That it was fascinating that it is nicely tiled, it is paved, it's got an entertainment area, it oversees above, nice parking, it flows naturally into the property. To me, the aesthetics of the issue suggest that the original intention was for it to be a swimming pool. And the public protector makes the point to say the matter was raised with the president. And in fact, that's how we invoked the National Key Points Act. And my challenge with this issue is that it was clear from the beginning that the president was going to be liable for the cost. That's the invoking of the law. And then when you realize there was a capital issue, we then moved away from the National Key Points Act. And I submit to you that it is undue benefit. It cannot be argued that that is the exercise that has been demonstrated to us, that is for that purpose. I mean, it's quite fascinating. There's a wall around it for privacy, which if it was just for firefighting purposes, I'm battling to understand why it was so elaborately put together. The third point here, and I've raised this issue, I'm wanting to argue, I'm unclear about this issue, Minister. how you begin to say it is improbable that the president will liaise with such a junior official. You might be entitled to your view in this regard. And your further point says, we use the point about the president's name being moved, which is both tabled in the SIU report, tabled in your report. I find it fascinating that there's a common theme across any project that pertains to, and parallel to this issue, as a matter of lending, where the fundamental argument is always that, no, we just use the president's name, and people are that submissive that in the name of the president, regardless of how illegal, how obscure the project might be, in the name of the president, when he says it, we suspend all thinking. We can't draw conclusions for ourselves to say, no, this thing is wrong, it's illegal, it's corruption. No, none of the above. As long as you use the president's name, then the project must file right through. The plane must land at Waterkloof, the swimming pool must be built, because it's immaterial who's given the instruction, as long as it's in the name. The third point I want links to this particular point is that the public protector highlights specifically for this reason that the project manager or the architect, Minenhle Makhanya, became effectively the project manager. And someone who then could deviate funding in the public works budget for this project to be completed. So clearly he was acting under someone's instruction. I would assume if the president has hired an architect, that architect, if the public protector makes the correlation to say that architect became project manager effectively, which is quite bizarre that an independent contractor was able to direct such key ministries. But the point is, overriding all the senior levels that you highlighted, simply then, in the instruction of the president, then acted. We cannot, as this committee, simply say there's ignorance on the part of the president. I find that it would be quite offensive to say the president simply did not know, unless we're willing to go there and say it was a project he didn't know. Or furthermore, that the instruction to the architect in this regard, as the public protector highlighted, was in fact the instruction of the president. So I would submit. I mean, it would be bizarre if I came to you today and said the president has given the instruction that you must absolve him of any responsibility on the Nkanda project in the name of the president, that you would succumb to that. Why are you implying that other people are simply victims of the same? The other point here is that the issue of cost inflation is, I think, all of us can agree on. But I want to propose that it was in fact an exercise in cross-subsidization. That yes, the project was committed. What is an equivalent of an RDP house was built for 6.4 million rands. But where is the balance in payment? I want to submit that it was reattributed to the other projects that were taking place in the house. I want to say, just like any South African, to arrive there and for the proposal to be made that because it's shoddy work, it's not luxury, I think is a misnomer. No South African has a bulletproof, heavily secured clinic at their doorstep. The president in this instance has. And even if the project of the clinic is insufficient and is poor, doesn't suggest that fundamentally there is a benefit that the president has derived to which he must pay. We can't, to sit here and not imply that, to say the public protector is wrong in this regard, would be undermining another institution of government. So if I understand how projects of this nature have worked, in that there's an inflation of cost, how am I, as a South African, being willing to say more work must be done and whether that work will be done at the cost that it is supposed to be done for? I submit to you that the history, you build your reputation on the basis of what you've done, not what you are going to do. Therefore, the history of this project says there's inflation of cost. I cannot, as a member of parliament, not tasked to defend number one, that it is logical and acceptable that more work must be done. I can see, but I do believe that where it's incomplete, whatever evidence must be brought must be put forward, but I would submit to you that the work that must be complete must ultimately be for the President's account. Because as a taxpayer, South African, it would be illogical to say that more inflated costs must go forward against the backdrop of a lack of a forensic evidence as to why a house that is that price, what happened to the difference in money. So, Chairperson, I want to submit that to me, it became quite crystal clear, having been on site, that the President has derived significant benefit, that the Public Protector is correct in her submission, that in fact this particular project, we can argue issues of scope creep, etc. The conclusion fundamentally is that no South African, in fact what should have been a security upgrade became a presidential upgrade. Therefore, if that is the approach we must take, then the asset must belong to the people of South Africa. If it is to belong to President Jacob Zuma, he must be able to finance a portion of it. For as I asked General Zuma, who I'm most grateful for the tour that he gave, I asked the question, what happens tomorrow morning when President Zuma decides he no longer wants to be the president? That asset is to his benefit and to his inheritance on land that belongs to a trust that the people of South Africa must finance. And I believe the Public Protector was correct that there's undue benefit in the public, and the president must be able to pay back a portion of the money that is accrued. Thanks.
Honorable Singh.
Thank you very much, Chairman.
I hope, Minister, you're taking account of all this because there were a number of questions. Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I did say at Peter Maritzburg that we welcome the report of the Minister, provided useful information, but we cannot agree with the categorical conclusion that the President is not liable to pay anything at all. Having said that, Chairperson, today's presentation brings up some very intriguing aspects. Because from our discussions last week, we realized that when a security report is written, that whatever is contained in that report as interventions that are needed to protect whoever the person is, whether it's a president or a minister, must be done. Now, today we are hearing from the minister that there was a security report, but then it's experts and professionals who were to implement those services. Did they have carte blanche to change the scope and whatever was suggested by the security personnel? Because that's what I seem to be hearing from the Honorable Minister, that there was a security report and some professional expert, and we have to be told who that is or was or who they were, came along and did whatever they wanted in spite of the security report. In the second slide, through your Chairperson, Honorable Minister, you're quite correct. You showed us that slide, 135.2 million. But in Peter Maritzburg, there was no mention of consultants' fees or costs of professional fees. As far as I can recall, there was a 70 million rand amount that was spoken about the additional work, the visitor center, etc., etc. 50 million was actual work and 20 million rand was professional fees. About 40% of the total cost there was professional fees, which is something that we have to ask the Honorable Minister of Public Works about. Can we have 40% of the total cost of a project at professional and consultancy fees? So if you can just talk to us about those fees that you mentioned were included in the 135.2 million. Third question relates, and Honorable Kubai asked this question as well, and we thank you for that, to Superintendent Linda. Now, in any civil service, in any government department, they have delegated powers. As much as we can say that this person was a deputy director, to what extent did Superintendent L.F. Linda have delegated powers to deal with this particular project? Is there any evidence of the delegated powers? And what kind of action is being taken against Superintendent L.F. Linda to repay this money? Because if the superintendent instructed and directed that these things be built, this 135 million rand be spent, then surely the superintendent must pay. Now we want to know what has happened with the superintendent. Through you, Chair, Honorable Minister, there's a lot of emphasis on interviews with regard to what the SIU has said. But I think you've been selective in that regard, because Honorable Swart has picked it out, that there have been selective quotes from the SIU report, and you haven't actually spoken about everything that the SIU report contains. But let me go back, Honorable Chairperson, to the swimming pool. I mean, there's a top secret report here, right, which says water reservoir. In order to curb potential fire hazard and due to lack of infrastructure and water, which was erratic, a water reservoir was constructed for firefighting purposes. It's surprising. I think all of us got this. I don't know if the media got this. Now, there's no mention of a swimming pool, but it mentions a water reservoir. Where does the swimming pool come into this picture? Also, to you, Chairperson, when we were there on the site visit, and when we were looking at the barracks, and when we were talking about the need for the barracks and these units, Major General Zuma, who was representing you at that stage, said, no, well, these could have been built for anything. We intended to build a police station in the area, and police would have stayed there. But we cannot build a police station on Ngonyama Trust land. That is a policy, and can you confirm whether that is a policy of your department, that you do not build police station on Ngonyama Trust land, whereas 135.2 million rand of infrastructure, according to that slide, was built on Ngonyama Trust land. So what is the relationship between Ngonyama Trust and SAPS with regard to police station? The next question, Honorable Chairperson, is this. Why, even up to today, is SAPS and the SANDF not taking responsibility and ownership for those units? We were told that those units are being occupied by SAPS, not because they wanted to, but because there was vandalism there. So they just went in and they said, no, let's protect this asset, this taxpayer's asset, and let's live in those units, and let's share 10-10 between SAPS and SANDF. Why is there no taking of ownership and responsibility? Why is the Minister of Public Works not transferring these units to SAPS and SANDF? Because in this top secret report as well, Honorable Chairperson, where they write about the need for the infrastructure, the principles governing the erection of the infrastructure, it was decided that the following principles would be adhered to. And amongst them, number two, security personnel and other government employees would have to be accommodated locally through the creation of a government security hub of services adjacent to the private household. To base security personnel at the nearest town, Eshowe, was impractical. Parking for security vehicles would also be needed. So why isn't SAPS then taking responsibility for those units and the SANDF? And lastly, well, maybe the Honorable, I don't know if the Honorable Minister of Police can answer, but maybe the Honorable Public Works at a later stage. What were the circumstances surrounding the appointment of Minenke Makaya as a resident? Was there anything in writing? Was there any directive? Was there a tender that went out? And the very last question is, Chairperson, why is there so much of neglect currently at the private household of the President and the surrounding infrastructure built by government? Why is there so much of neglect? We saw cattle, well, with goats roaming, not conducive for an entry to a President's house. There were goat droppings all over. There were fire hoses stolen from the houses within the private precincts of the President. How could that have happened if we've got SAPS there? Because SAPS assured us when we were there, when they were asked the question about the security monitors, you know, what about the security of the President? They assured us, no, we've got measures in place to beef up the security. How can things be stolen right from the wall of the houses in which, where the President lives? So those are just some of the questions for the Minister of Police. Thank you, sir.
The Honorable Singh asked 8 questions. If you combine that with the others, it's quite substantial, Honorable Minister. Will you respond, please?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. On the question posed by Ms. Kwai, on the question of otherwise that are being undertaken to deal with a matter of this nature. Honorable Sakia, wrong to then say that the President took a decision to refer this matter to the Minister of Police. And we should all know that we are wrong when we begin to advocate that. Precisely because the Minister of Police could only be activated by the resolution of the House being Parliament, in this particular instance. And therefore, all the ease available is for the Minister of Police to react to the resolution duly adopted by Parliament. And so it has nothing to do with the President's decision, nothing to do with what the President thought. It has everything to do with the deliberations at the level of this particular committee and the referral of recommendations by this, by that particular committee, the previous Article committee, and subsequent debates in the House, and the adoption of a resolution. And therefore, the Minister of Police reacted to that. And I think in the Peter Maritzburg engagement, if I may refer to it that way, we clearly showed the aspects of the resolution 5.9 of the ad hoc committee of the resolution of Parliament, that therefore the minister needed to ascertain and actually make a determination which essentially has got to deal with the security and non-security of the four identified queries, the items as per the public protector report. Now, within the letter, what Mr. Zondi, who's the spokesperson of the minister, confirmed was the existence of the letter, not the content of the letter. There is no way that you would have somebody like a Mr. Zondi, for an example, who was never there in the first place, having got to confirm that indeed the President instructed Mr. Linde, or Senior Superintendent Linde, you know, in the manner in which it is alleged. So there's absolutely no way. It's quite it's just simply impossible and so on. But the fact of the matter is that what he alluded to was, of course, confirming that there is an existence of such a letter, which, of course, there is. And nobody disputed that. Now, I'm not sure. I mean, when you refer to the discrepancy between the report of the SIU and the report of the Minister of Police, I'm not sure what exactly, perhaps you can enlighten me about what exactly is the issue that you're referring to when you talk to this issue. Now, the fact of the matter is that the SIU dealt with a whole range of issues. Now, the Minister of Police, his scope is defined by that which was actually queried as non-security features, for instance. In this case, therefore, question of the fire pool, the animal enclosure, the question of the amphitheater, and the visitor's lounge. So that's what it is. So it's not the entire sort of a broad scope of issues that the Minister of Police had to deal with, because it's mandated by exactly what it is that needed to be focused on. But also we shouldn't forget one thing, that what we have shown through this particular report is what instruments and authorities were relied upon to arrive at certain conclusions, right? Informed exactly by what? Now, and that's why in the documentation that has been made available to all of you, we show the instruments that have been referred to. For instance, if you want to know why there is a fire pool and why it was constructed, for an example, there is a specific sort of document that talks to that particular issue and various sort of interactions from various sort of agencies and formations that were, responsible for for the Prestige project and so on. So that's the one part around it. And of course, of importance here is the centrality of the work by security experts. Because it's not just work by anybody who looks at a particular item and just perceives an item to be what it is or should be, and so it's what an expert from a security point of view will unpack and say this needs to be addressed in a particular way, and it has got to be addressed in this particular form and so forth. So that's generally the thing that we shouldn't ever lose sight of and so forth. The 31 million estimated for completion. I wish I could actually help you on that one. In fact, I find it puzzling that part of the public discussion and debate, when people keep on referring to the 246 million, in it, the 31 million is included as estimated the cost for some outstanding work and so on. I mean, the question really is, since when do you have an estimation as a cost? Because an estimation is something that doesn't exist. It's not even a commitment for that matter, because from a financial management point of view, when you talk of a commitment, you're talking about something that indeed you can then essentially log onto your expenditure, a sign of things and so forth. But certainly an estimation is just an estimation, you know, but it's not a cost, but it's spoken about as if it's fact. Now, I've never seen an estimation that is fact. In fact, you never ever come across it, because an estimation is something that doesn't exist. So what is my attitude in relation to that? I don't have an attitude in relation to that, because I do not know what it means, what informed the calculation of such an estimation. Somebody just came up with a 31 million estimation and then listed what it is and so on. I just don't have a sense as to what informed such an estimation. Now, you also referred to the issue, or almost one, to the question of discussion between the public protector and the president regarding the Crown. Of course, it's an allegation that has been made, but still remains a hearsay until it is tested in one form or the other. But it remains a hearsay, and I think yourself is a person of a particular profession. You would know what I'm referring to when I say that it remains a hearsay, because it is. It remains a hearsay. Now, but also we shouldn't forget that the president compiled a report reacting to the public protector's report and the discussions here in Parliament, for an example, which in a sense basically refutes, and this would be, you know, even the existence of such a discussion as well. Now, and I think it's important that that's what we know, and that's what essentially has got to be followed. Now, a discussion between two people wherever they were meeting and so on is what we don't know. What we know is that you then also have a report that was filed by the president with Parliament, which essentially, you know, the essence of it is that it actually refutes even this particular so-called commitment that arose allegedly out of a discussion between two people and so on. So I think it's important to take note of that point.
There was one, sorry to interrupt, Minister, you asked for one clarity on this.
No, I'll come back to you on the first one.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Honourable Maimane, you spoke about spoke about the sample alternatives, undue benefit, time, aesthetics, and so forth. All that we made available to yourself as members of this committee is where does the issue of a fire pool come from? It doesn't arise now in 2015 or 2014. It doesn't arise now. So it arises out of the evaluation report in the first instance. So, and there is an interesting sort of a trail of engagement and discussions around this very same question involving, amongst other things, your security experts, public works as a department, engineers and architects on the very same question, for an example. And one of them, and it's there in the report that we also made available to yourself, that is that there was a consideration, and that consideration was also undertaken, the question of a galaxy reservoir of about 250 kiloliters, a capacity of water. But then there's a further discussion that says even that capacity itself, given the architecture of the residence, is not sufficient. And therefore, you'll see in the report, in the reports we made available to yourselves, says we needed to have an extra capacity of about 138 kiloliters of water. The discrepancy, and this is where the issue of scope creep comes in also amongst others, the discrepancy is that at the level of execution and construction of such a fire pool, for an example, instead of a 138 kiloliter capacity, it is said that the architect continued, proceeded to construct a fire pool with a 175 kiloliter capacity. And that's the only discrepancy that exists there. But the whole notion of fire pool and what it was to be used for, you have a trail of that between secret aspects, public works, and so forth. We even alluded in the main report made available some time ago that even in the documents of the Department of Public Works letter F, you have a specific design there of a fire pool and the discussion relating to the need for the construction of a fire pool. Now, and therefore, is it a security feature? Yes, it is a security feature in terms of how it was considered, conceptualized, and also taking into account all the other inputs from various professionals around the question of a firefighting capability that was expected to be there and be on site. Senior Superintendent Linde works for the South African Police Service, not even the Presidency. And therefore to suggest that the President would go to a Deputy Director level, for an example. Now, I'm saying this thing because, for an example, I know this thing. I'm so recycled. I've been also an administrator for quite some years now. And I know this thing for a fact that it's to then want to suggest that even if, for instance, I was a director general at some point, or a commissioner, or any other thing that I've been before, it's, you know, now I'm talking about being in one particular portfolio, one department, that you would then expect me to go down to a deputy director general and instruct a deputy director general to do certain things. So therefore I want to suggest, for an example, that you have a head of state that would go to some other department there, not even in the presidency, but go there to a deputy director, seven levels below, and instruct him to do things in a particular way in his favor. It's highly improbable, as you said. I'm saying highly from my side, and you say you are, of course, doubtful of that, and that's your view. I don't have a problem with that. is this tendency, generally speaking, name dropping? You know, if I want certain things to be done in a particular way, or they say, you know, I have this instruction from my boss, Mr. Maimani, for this thing to be done in a particular way, and so on. It's a common exercise, and that also is confirmed by the SIU itself, as I say, which makes this observation that there is this tendency to for civil servants to actually do no name dropping and so on. Now, I find it quite intriguing that Oron Maimani is saying that regardless, if your name has been used, it's immaterial that indeed you did say so or not say so. I find that very intriguing, because then the society that we're creating, for an example, amongst other things, would be fraught with so many problems. Because, you know, we are then saying, I should be able to say, this is what you said, or I perceived you to have said this. And it's immaterial that whether or not you said it. The fact that I've been able to use your name because you happen to have to occupy a particular position, you know, it's the same thing as, yes, you have said it, you must have done it or something. And I find that extremely problematic, because
What is? I couldn't hear what you were saying, Honourable Mani. Okay, let's allow the minister to respond.
Yeah.
Honourable Minister.
So, you did say that it doesn't matter. It's immaterial. When you say it doesn't matter, when you say immaterial, you say in effect it doesn't matter. If your name has been used, so it's immaterial. And so on, and that's the immateriality that I have a problem with, because it is a material matter whether something would be said in your name, and whether or not that in itself must have been said indeed by yourself, and so on. So that's the problem that I have with that one. You also raised the point about Mr. Makaya appointed the project manager and so forth. I think those issues will also be clarified in a later engagement with the Honourable Minister of Public Works. In the same vein about the immateriality and the name being used, you say that I, as the minister, would succumb if you were to come to me and say the president says this and so forth. I wouldn't. Because the direct line between myself and the president. So why would I be instructed by the president through you, for an example? Because, you know, if he wants to communicate or instruct me in a particular manner, for an example, he would have to do so directly and so forth. So why would it be through you and so forth? So I wouldn't succumb. Because that's a hearsay. It doesn't matter. If you come and you say that the president wants to do this and that, and you think that I'm going to succumb, I would succumb, I would certainly not do so. The question of cost inflation, which you perceive as cross-subsidization and so on, I would want to suggest, Mr. Maimani, for an example, that point is a point for discussion and debate, I suspect, for yourselves as members of the ADO committee here and so forth, in terms of how do you see across the question of cost inflation and vis-a-vis the issues of cross subsidization and things like that. But I also do think that in the interactions with the Minister of Public Works, you will also be clarified, hopefully, around this particular matter. Again, it's just an expression of a view that, in your view, given what you undertook as members of the ADO committee and you walk around in the local kind of exercise that you undertook around the president's residence, do you think that there was a significant benefit in so on? That's a view. advocate for this incident, not as a public protector, as a report, and further debate, of course, in society and so forth. But where do those particular features actually come from? And so it goes. Honourable Member Singh, whenever I see you, I remember what you said. He who does what? Eventually your surname is Singh. Yeah, okay. That's a very interesting. I remember when you were insinuating certain things, and I say, he who does whatever is on, an interesting English expression. I just remembered that your surname is Singh. Okay. Now, look, I do say, indeed, as I said in this current presentation, for an example, that the question of a need is established by security experts through their evaluation and so on. Now, but the manifestation of that need requires that you must have your professionals and experts to then, you know, deal with it. And there's no contradiction in that. For an example, in our report, as I had alluded to, in the South African Police Service Security Evaluation Report of 2009, the need for a firefighting capability to be made and be on-site is identified. But then, from that point onwards, you have further discussions and engagements between the police service, public works, architects, engineers, and so forth about that need. And hence the need, you then have this discussion, for instance, about a 250 kiloliter water capacity, you know, through a galaxy reservoir and so forth. And of course, that being not sufficient, increase that to 138 kiloliters water capacity, and therefore the need for a fire pool. And so those things are part of the initial sort of stages of the project itself in satisfying a security evaluation need. That said, you need to have a firefighting capability to be on site and so on. It's incorrect to then suggest, Mr. Singh, that when I spoke about the 135.2 million regarding the barracks, the police barracks and the defense force barracks, I did not say anything about professional fees. I did. Not verbally only. Verbally, yes, but also in a written form, it's in your report. I did. That this money, this amount of money, is also inclusive of professional fees, the 135.2 million, which is essentially your barracks for the police, the defense force, the clinic, the helipad. And, you know, on top of it, therefore, you include the question of the professional fees. The issue of Superintendent Linde delegated powers. I think that matter would also, you know, it's not possible for me sitting here to give you the overall delegation framework, for an example, either from, you know, as of how it applies now or how it applied then and so forth. But it's not really possible for me to do that. But I think it's a matter that will also become much more clearer as and when there are further follow-ups on this particular issue, for an example. But what is connection is between what my brief is not about water, so for an example, I did not deal with that particular case. Now, unless Honorable Imane, you may be wanting to suggest that there is evidence that wants to suggest that the senior superintendent Linde was subjected to some sort of a horrific kind of pressure for him to then turn around and say that he invented this thing. It wasn't the instruction of the president and so on. He said so. He himself to the SIU that these were not the words of the president. This was me just talking and I wanted this and that. And that was so effectively telling a lie. And that's basically that. Now, I think I've clarified, Mr. Singh, the question of a fire pool vis-a-vis the question of a water reservoir. Because there is, you know, quite a myriad of discussion between various role players in the prestige project around the question of the construction of a water reservoir and that being there, but not being sufficient for an example, and therefore needed to have an extra sort of a capacity. It was estimated that it needed to be 138 kiloliters of water, of an open water source, but eventually at the level of construction, it was constructed at 175 kiloliters of water capacity. Now, I think I had said that there is a process underway, for instance, in relation to the question of the official handover of those barracks to the South African Police Service and the National Defence Force. I'm not sure. You must have. I don't know what. I think you were conversing, for an example, to find out from me whether can we build police station on Ngonyama Transland. I had said that the Ngonyama Trust Act itself requires that we enter into a proper lease and so on. So if you follow the stipulated procedure, it's possible to therefore build a police station or a satellite police station in a rural area. Of course, you need to follow the dictates of what Ngonyama Trust Act number 3 of 1994 stipulates, for an example, around these particular matters. It's really a possibility. I therefore would want I'm not sure what the discussion was between yourself and Major General Zuma on the issue, because of course I wasn't there, but whether the two of you understood each other when you were then having this discussion, I'm not too sure. But you know, all I can say to you is that the question of building a police station in the rural area falling on land, falling under the auspices of Ngonyama Trust, the Act, for an example, you'd have to follow a stipulated procedure. That procedure is about leasing the land itself, and therefore, there is a possibility that you certainly can. Now, on the last two points, Mr. Singh, that you raised the question of the appointment of Mr. Minenhle Makhanya, the circumstances thereof, and the neglect. could not be built due to the fact that negotiations collapsed. You know, so in other words, it was a matter that was being conversed and explored to build a police station. But of course, negotiations collapsed for whatever the reasons were. So it tends to, again, it speaks to this possibility that I'm talking about, that indeed you need to therefore look at what the provisions of the Ingonyama Trust Act are in relation to the leasing of the land, for an example, and therefore look at applicable prescripts at the level of, you know, erecting a structure of that particular nature. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honourable Swart, you just had an issue around the reference to the SIU that the Minister wanted clarity on.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, and I don't think it's wise to engage in too much detail about this issue because it is the subject of litigation and it might prejudice the state's case, but the only point I want to make was on page 207 of the report, there is a particulars of claim that sets out what is being sued, what Mr. McCunney has been sued for, and the total amount is 68 million, and it sets out, you might want to read that at a later stage, but it does say, in this regard, the particulars of claim note, McCunney varied the scopes of work at Lintandla and authorized the construction of the following structures which were not security measures. And then I gave you the list, the tunnels, the visitor's lounge, the basement parking, and there's a list of 9 items then that does. The only point I wanted to make was there appeared to be a discrepancy between that report and your report, but maybe we should leave it because it might prejudice litigation, but the point is there. I just wanted to point that out. And then just lastly, Chairperson, rightly or wrongly, Minister, the President on the 14th of August, when he wrote his letter to the Speaker, he said, I deem the following appropriate, that the Minister of Police as designated Minister under the Key Points Act report to Cabinet on the determination to whether the President is liable for any contribution. So that was prior to the Ad Hoc Committee. Then we had the Ad Hoc Committee resolution of Parliament, and correctly you have responded by saying you acted in terms of the Ad Hoc Committee's report. But the President did indicate in a letter to the Speaker, but then obviously the Ad Hoc Committee then took that, so it was a parallel process. So it's a combination of the two processes, I would think. So I'm not saying you're incorrect. You have said that you acted in terms of the Ad Hoc Committee. This was a letter to the Speaker. It does indicate from the President, so it doesn't really take it any further. And then the last small point is Mr. Rindle requested implementation of Phase 3. And maybe the Minister of Public Works could help us with that. Obviously, it's difficult for you to calculate what the further costs will be, but his cost estimate is 31 million. You're correct, Minister, to say it's an estimate. We don't know, but that is what he requested implementation of. That's been stopped pending the further investigations up to now. And so the question everyone would like to know is, what are the steps that need to be taken to institute the further safety features? And maybe the Minister of Public Works could respond at an appropriate time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Swart, for clarifying those issues. Indeed, you are correct in terms of the first one. There are certain processes that are currently happening where the state is pursuing the case against Mr. Mkanya, and we surely don't want to go into those details because it may prejudice the case. So those type of details, thank you for clarifying the question and also then from the side of the Minister the response. There's been another few hands, and I will recognize the members in the following order. The Honourable Mulder, the Honourable Breitenbach, the Honourable Mama Slala, and also the Honourable the Deputy Chief of Obedience, the Honourable Tlakude. After that, I have the hands of the Honourable Kwankwa, the Honourable Chavisa, and the Honourable Kupisa. Let's start with the Honourable Mulder.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. Honourable Minister, you've just indicated, I just want to start off with this point. You received a note to say that the negotiations with regard to the police station has fell through. That's why it was not built. Now, why was it relevant, the question of the police station? Because we were all trying to find answers, how did these 21 houses happen? Why the 21 houses? And the argument was put forward that, well, maybe there would be a police station, and then the personnel serve the police station needs barracks, and that's why the negotiations with regard to the police station fell through. But the negotiations to erect the houses, according to your presentation this morning, did not fall through. This morning you told us that that is part of a lease agreement with Inkonyama Trust to erect the houses. So the houses were erected, not a problem. Why is that relevant? Because it's directly linked to the homestead of the president. I'll come back to that. But the minister, you also indicated this morning that the reason why you drafted the report was basically in response to the ad hoc committee. At Peter Maritzburg, you referred to point 5.9 of the recommendations of the ad hoc committee, and you said that is your sole mandate and nothing else. I'll come back to that just now. But this is what I pointed out. There was a directive to you given by the president, and I know you don't want us to refer to that, but I do, to the president who appointed you in the first place. And that directive to you was given by the president in his report dated the 14th of August. This is what is now quoted from that. The Minister of Police has a designated minister to report to Cabinet on a determination to whether the president is liable for any contribution in respect of security upgrades and then the qualification having regard to the legislation, past practices, culture and findings contained in the respective reports. This was the first indication that you as minister should get involved, and it came from the president. But before then, you were not involved because the public protector clearly said the Department of Police, not the minister, the Department of Police and the Treasury should look into it. So the first, when you came onto the scene, was when the president directed the minister. Now, you've indicated since then that you did not act to this. I've asked you that in Peter Maritzburg. You did not act to this. Why not? Because you said you needed a resolution from Parliament. Be that as it may. So you received a resolution from Parliament when the ad hoc committee said in 5.9 the same thing as the president. And one can argue, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, that the ad hoc committee took their line from the president's directive. Maybe it's so, maybe it's not. But earlier today you said basically that you bound yourself to only those four issues. And you dealt only with those four issues in the report. You know them. The swimming pool, the cattle kraal, the chicken run, the visitor center, etc. But who asked you to only look into those four things? Because the ad hoc committee also didn't ask you to look into those four things only. Neither did the director of the president. The ad hoc committee's recommendation 5.9, which you says is the mandate that you took, says the committee recommends as a matter of what constitutes security and non-security upgrades. That's the general term that the ad hoc committee used. The ad hoc committee does not say only those four issues. And why is it relevant? Because Honourable Swart just now referred to the long list of things that the Special Investigative Unit indicated are also features that are non-security related, and that's why they are now taking Mr. Nkanya to court. But you continue to argue with all due respect that you have only been busy with those four issues because somebody asked you to look only into those four. But I would suggest there are many other issues as well. But if I may come to this morning's presentation, Honourable Chairperson, and I'm saying this with all due respect to the Honourable Minister, as well as to the colleagues in the ruling party who are arguing and defending on these issues. It reminds me, with all respect, to the couple, the parents standing next to the parade ground, looking at the army squad marching past, and their dear son Johnny is out of step. And the mother says, look, look my husband, Johnny is the only one in step. All the others are out of step. I'm saying that, why? Because you can bring any report, you can refer to anything in any report, no, it's wrong. That one acted out of his own malice intent, and this one did that, and that one did that. But only Johnny is perfectly in step. Let's come to the presentation of this morning. You started off in the first slide referring to the security evaluation done by SAPS, and you argued to say, well, that thing did not refer to, for example, a swimming pool. It said a firefighting capacity. And then you said, then the experts and the practitioners came into play. Now, I've got to ask you, does that mean that the security evaluation drawn up in the first place does not consist of experts? Who are drawing up a security evaluation? Are the experts not supposed to do that? I think the experts did that. And the experts said there should be a firefighting capacity. You idea would be good of what you call a fire pool. I want to put this once and for all. I don't find the word fire pool in the dictionary. I think it's a creation that we suddenly come up with. I've been to Inkandla, like all the other colleagues. It's a swimming pool, nothing else. It's a swimming pool that has the capacity, the water, all water does have the capacity to fight fire. If we are serious, then we should change the name of all swimming pools in South Africa to fire pools. Because every house can use that as a firefighting capacity. It's a swimming pool. It's not a fire pool. I have to ask the experts, if it's a fire pool, why would the fire pool be in the shape of a boat? It's in the form of a boat. I saw it with my own eyes. It's the image of a boat. Straight to the back, all the way forward to the bow of a boat. A theme for a swimming pool entertainment area. But we say it's a fire pool. Why would it be in that shape? Coincidence? Some expert reason for that? Better pressure? I don't know. But it doesn't make sense. It's a swimming pool. And we should stop talking about things to try and whatever. But Chairperson, let me come to the second slide. The Honourable Minister says, and he refers to all the things in the purple area, with a purple boundary around them, and he says, these are all state properties. Now my question, does those properties belong to the state? The Minister refers to state properties. Do they belong to the state? And if they belong to the state, in what legal fashion do they belong to the state? Does the state have title deed to those properties? How does it belong to the state? Or are we calling them state properties because we need to call them state properties so that we can devolve them away from the president? State properties. Does that land belong to the state? Yes or no? And if it's state properties, how do they belong to the state? I would like to come to the third slide where the minister uses the report of the SIU to answer the question about Superintendent Linde. And that is how we play with words. The police calls him Senior Superintendent. We now change him to a Junior Official. But okay, I understand the hierarchy within the police. But what concerns me is that if we want to use the report of the SIU, that paragraph that suits us, to say that this man says he did that on his own volition. But then we prefer to ignore other things also in the same report that are damning in terms of findings of things that went wrong at Nkandla. I found our way of doing things very strange. One of the colleagues says, but what action has now been taken against this bad official, Mr. Linde? We've charged him, we found him guilty, we want to sentence him. But maybe we should listen to him. Why don't we listen to Mr. Linde? Don't you think that he may have something to tell us? Or don't you want to hear what Mr. Linde says? Mr. Linde, why on earth would you go around misusing the president's name? Why would you do that? What benefit is there for you? Why would you do that? Don't you want to hear what Mr. Linde has to say? Why would he go around writing in a letter, and we've all seen the letter, the wording is there, he knows why this, these 21 houses and everything needs to be constructed, but I would suggest let's call Mr. Linde. Why don't we ask him? I think it's necessary to do so. We as a committee cannot go along hanging this one, judging that one, sentencing this one, but we don't listen to them. Our alternate party. I think Mr. Linde needs to be heard. The fourth slide you used this morning says the adjacent land, and that's now all land outside the small circle that you've drawn, though, state. It says the adjacent land falls under Inkonyama Trust, the clinic, the barracks, the helipad. But what about the rest of the property? Inkonyama Trust, doesn't that also own the property on which the homestead of the president is built? I've been asking this question since that document you won, and I don't get an answer. And I think it's vital. We are talking about 246 million rand of taxpayers' money. And just a side note, Mr. Minister, you've said on numerous occasions, you don't know where that figure comes from. You've said that. It's page 189 of the public protector's report. That's where the amount comes from. It's clearly set out. Total amount paid to contractors, 161 million. And by the way, 78 million was paid to one contractor and then the contract was cancelled because of bad work. But the money was paid, 78 million. It's set out there, 246 million. That's where it comes from. But the question I've been asking since ad hoc committee one is, the property on which the homestead of the president is built, to whom does that belong? Does it belong to the president? Does he have title deed? Yes or no? I don't know. Nobody gives me the answer. Does it belong to the Nkunyama Trust? Yes or no? I think we should know because taxpayers' money is being spent there. And then the obvious question that we also don't get an answer to, can you register a legal bond from a bank on property that does not belong to you if it belongs to the Nkunyama Trust? Can you register that land? We don't know. The 21 houses, Chairperson, that's the fifth slide. The Minister said that an agreement was reached with the Nkunyama Trust to lease that land where the houses are built. Now, I referred to that here earlier. And you've indicated to us, Minister, in the last meeting in Pietermaritzburg that the houses are 1.1 kilometer away, etc., etc. If you go the way straight, like the crow would fly, it's 300 meters. Why would those houses be built so close to that proximity? No police station, that could not be negotiated. But it could be negotiated to have the houses there. And what happened last time round, we tried to draw a small circle around the homestead, and everything outside has nothing to do with the president. It's not correct. Why would the Department of Public Works find it necessary to build 21 houses? To house police and defense force personnel out there, no military base, no police station. Why there? A helipad next to it. Why? We all know why. Don't let us fool ourselves. We all know why. Obviously, because the president stays adjacent to that and he's there to serve the president. Finally, Chairperson, the minister ended his conclusion on the last slide. And the last slide made the point, what about the future? And it says the following, we reiterate what has been stated by various investigative reports, that outstanding work must be completed. The security re-evaluation shall be conducted soon by a team of experts from law enforcement agencies, and then that such process must strictly adhere to principles of project management, oversight, and adherence to various prescripts. The last sentence. Isn't that what should have happened in the first instance? Why now? Why after 200, you can deduct the 31 million because that's phase 3 and the public protector refers to that. Let's take your figure, 206 million. Why was 206 million rand of taxpayers' money wasted without adherence to principles of project management, oversight, and adherence to various prescriptions? Why? Who's responsible for that? And then with regard to the other outstanding security things, personally, Chairperson, I'm not in favor of spending one single cent, not one cent further on that project. Why? The taxpayers have done so already. Let's go and find the missing millions, because there are missing millions. And once we find that money, then we can complete the project. But the taxpayers should not pay one further cent.
Honourable Breitenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Minister. You constantly apologize for your English. I just want to tell you, your English is really very good, and my Zulu is really very bad, so you don't need to apologize. And your comment about the civil service, I'm afraid I'm not aware of that practice where you use the name of some other person to get something done. I usually manage to get things done using my own name. But I'll take note of your comment. There's a lot of questions that will be put to you. I imagine that the Minister of Public Works will also deal with. But let me start with Senior Superintendent Linda. The poor fellow has suddenly become the object of a lot of attention, and I'm sure that he's a worried man as we sit here. He's say that no action has been taken against him, I've got no doubt that he will become some sort of scapegoat. As it is, Mr. Linder is sitting in his office in Silverton. That is so. And he has 2 years to go to pension, so I'm sure he's a very worried man. But the senior superintendent, Mr. Minister, I can't agree with you, is not a junior official. A senior superintendent is a senior officer in the South African Police Force, and he's in fact a full colonel. And there's nothing junior officerish about a full colonel. But Mr. Linder didn't write these letters, and you and I both know that. These letters were written by the Divisional Commissioner of Supply Chain Management. And there's nothing at all junior about a divisional commissioner. He's in fact a general. And you'll note that wherever Mr. Linder signed these letters, he signed on behalf of. And so these letters do not come from Mr. Linder. He's just the poor fool who does the typing and the writing. The letter comes from the divisional commissioner. Somebody writes a letter and signs it on your behalf. It comes from you, not from the poor fool who signed it on your behalf. And in any event, Mr. Linder is far from junior, because I see that on the pages where he signs in his own personal capacity, he signs as the chairman of the Building and Planning Committee for this project. So I hardly think that he's some little nobody stuck away in an office that has no communication powers with anybody at all. So that is not entirely true, that picture that you sketched. And when Mr. Linder in fact communicates with the Public Works, for instance, and writes to the Director General of Public Works and the Regional Manager, particularly of Public Works, and I refer to that letter of the 15th of October 2009, he sends it to the Regional Manager, who I presume is Mr. Kanyele, at Public Works. Mr. Kanyele promptly redirects the letter in his own hand to Mr. Makanya. And says, Mr. Makanya, for your attention as discussed, back at the very next day, the 16th of October 2009, which just demonstrates the application of the duty on part of Public Works. Everything was sent to Makanya and he just did as he pleased, and they approved it. So I don't know if you have any comments on that. Then my other problem is that I asked you in Pietermaritzburg, and I'm not sure that I made myself clear. Perhaps you didn't understand. My background is that of criminal law litigation, and I'm quite sure that yours isn't. So perhaps there's room for misunderstanding. I asked you if you would make available the reports of the experts upon whom you relied in your report. Now, there are two reasons for that. The one is, A, are they in fact experts? Because to give an expert opinion, you need to be an expert. And there's nothing here to suggest that any of these people were experts. So I'd like to satisfy myself that the experts upon whom you relied to come to your conclusions are in fact experts. The second difficulty is you refer to other experts whose reports I don't find. And they are the ones that I have more trouble with, because it's areas in which I have absolutely no expertise. So, for instance, you refer to a cultural expert and his views on the uses and the significance and other issues surrounding a cattle crop. I don't find that report. Perhaps I just didn't get it. But I don't find who the expert is. I don't find out why he's an expert, and I certainly don't find his views anywhere in the report that was supplied to me. And I would really like to see that, please. Then the bigger issue that I have, Mr. Minister, is really just this. Both yourself and the Minister of Public Works, and I'll put it to him so that he can answer for himself, is that both of your reports largely rehash the reports of the Public Protector and the Special Investigation Unit. Clearly those are the reports that you relied on in a very large degree for your information. And again, you'll forgive me, and this is said with the greatest of respect, both you and the Minister of Public Works rely on the President for your jobs. And you're to a certain degree controllable, both by your party and by president. And yet here the two of you sit to give us these rehashed views of other people's reports. The two people who should be here are the public protector and the head of the SIU. They have security of tenure. They're harder to get rid of than the two of you. They're reasonably independent, and you have no control over them. They're not here. Now that's very telling. Because all you've done, and particularly the Minister of Public Works admitted up front, you're relying on those reports to sit here and give us your views. So you're rehashing a view. It's not even hearsay. It's even less reliable than hearsay. You're rehashing the views of other people to this committee to produce your reports. I put it to you, Mr. Minister, that if you want your report to carry any credibility, and if you want us to accept what you're telling us, then what we need to do is we need to verify what you have said with the public protector in person and with the head of the SIU in person. And I find it extraordinarily odd that side of the house does not want to call those two people. The two people who are independent, the two people who have security of tenure, the two people who cannot be controlled will not be called to this committee so that we can interrogate their reports and get their views. I find it both very, very telling, very, very transparent, and quite astonishing. And I'd like your comments on that. And then, if you will, the Minister of Public Works says in his report, for instance, that the Department of Public Works will apportion costs to the Department of the Police and the Department of Defense on page 3 of his report. And he says this was recommended by the task team and it's already been implemented. Has it been implemented? What are the costs? How much have you paid? Have you been billed? Have you settled the accounts? I was told, as in Kamla, by General Zuma that in a very vague fashion while he was shifting around from foot to foot, that this matter needed further investigation, it needed to be investigated, it needed to be looked at, nothing had been decided, no one seemed to be sure, and you yourself weren't sure on that day. So the Minister of Public Works seems to be quite sure, why aren't you? That's all I have for the time being, thanks. If I can give anything else, I'll come back to you.
The Honourable Member Shlala.
Thank you, Chair, it is so unfortunate that we are sitting here today and discussing the things that we have discussed and concluded in our last meeting. Some of the people had no views in that particular meeting. Today they have used their right, it's fine. So my question to the minister, particularly on the letter, which is said to be a letter. This letter that we are referring to is a letter that says the president said, right? Now, such letter for me can't be referred to as an instruction from the president, not unless there's a letter from the president to Mr. Linda requesting what it alludes to. Now, I want to check with the minister if there is a letter from the president to Mr. Linda requesting what Mr. Linda is alluding to. I also want a chair to say that the house which Mr. Linda is referring to on the letter is the house next to the swimming pool, and all of us, we saw that house, and we had questions about it. The response was very clear and straightforward, that the house was used by policemen before the security upgrades, and now there are two options. It's either the president inherits the house for his family and pay for it, or the house gets demolished. All of us were here, were there when that response was given to us after Honorable Self asked that particular question. Now, I find it contradictory that this reference says that the president wants that house, or the house must be given to him. I find it very odd. Chairperson, Honorable Maimane is telling us about a fire pool, which is in actual fact a swimming pool. It's a pity that you were not part of our meeting in Pietermaritzburg after we came from Gandla. All of us as committee members, unanimously, we have agreed that that's not a fire pool. It is a swimming pool, as explained to us, which is used as a reliable water resource in a case of any fire that might erupt. Hence, there were hose pipes and the demonstration, you know, thereof. Now, my understanding of a swimming pool that is meant for entertainment, it must have a chlorine at least, and it must be clean, and what have you. What we saw there, no one can swim in it. It had no chlorine. You know, because we asked these questions from the people who were busy with the tour. And to come here and say there's an entertainment area there, we don't see any entertainment area there. And there are no walls for privacy. Now, we should not come here and create an impression because we see all these cameras when we all of us were in Gandla and saw exactly what transpired there. Now, let's go share to the document which Mr. Singh referred to. In that document, I want to refer to the principles governing the erection of infrastructure. The document says, any new capacity should benefit the local community in the short term to the extent possible and the maximized when the principal was no longer president, e.g. the clinic and the security compound. This document further says, the president would continue to receive state support when no longer president, and this must be factored in, as with other retired presidents, right? Chair, I'm raising this point because the presentation which was made to us as committee when we were at the clinic, it was made it very clear that the clinic will also benefit the community. And today we know nothing about those things. I want also, Chair, to raise the fact that this clinic we are referring to. And the bulletproof doors and what have you were not requested by the president. That must be very clear. They were requested by Department of Defense, a clinic for primary use of defense. It's in the report. It is outlined very clear in this report, because all of us, we've got these reports. Now, also, Chair, the helipad which we are consistently referring to, it is not a request by the state president. It is in our reports. We all know who requested all these things after the assessment which was made, not once, but twice in some instances, you know. So, logically, Chair, if we're to use logic, there is no helicopter that can land in any space where we were during our oversight. Now, Ngonyama Trust Land is actually relevant to have a helipad. That's logic. Because it's in an open field, probably when it's built, because I did not see a helipad there. I did not see it. Probably it will still be erected. Now, the area which is identified as an area for the helipad, for me, it is an area conducive for such a function. Chairperson, during our visit, it was made very clear that those properties, they belong to both SAPS and Defense Force, the clinic, the house guards, and what have you. But I think, Chair, here, we need to interrogate the issue of principles that governing the erection of infrastructure in a house of a president, instead of looking for some kind of an issue that can hold the president liable for whatever payment thereof. Because it's not there. All of us were traumatized when we saw Nganja. We were shocked to see many of the things which were not reported as a matter of fact. And I want to be upfront, Chair, and say that all of us, after we came from Nganja, we were saying the report of the Minister of Police was actually an eye-opener. And now today, it can't be credible. I find it very opportunistic and naive to say that. And I also want to be upfront, Chair, and reiterate the fact that I find the report of the Minister of Police very relevant and credible. And in fact, it is the one that assisted us to see exactly what transpired in Nganja, because nothing that we found there was not in that particular report. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Zankude.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by saying that, Chairperson, sikwatiko sifakaze ngalesikubonile. You'll know what that means. Chairperson, the report of the Minister of Police really did assist this committee in doing its work, because it correlates with what we saw at Nkandla. The over-inflated prices, poor workmanship, you name it. So we have been there. We are talking about what we know and what we saw. Also, Chairperson, let me remind this Honorable Committee that we are not conducting an investigation or opening an investigation, but we are dealing with the report of the Police Minister responding to the recommendations of the previous ARO Committee. Unfortunately, for my learned colleagues, they decided to walk out of this committee when we were dealing with the different investigative reports. The interministerial report, the public protector's report, the SIU report, the joint standing committee report, and the response of the president to the report of the public protector. And also, Chairperson, let me state it categorically clear that the public protector did not present the report in Parliament. That report was presented to the media. But the state president, knowing that he was appointed by Parliament, in his response to Parliament, attached that report to Parliament, of the public protector to Parliament. Then, Honorable Chairperson, let me assist my learned colleague, Honorable Melda. On the President's response to Parliament, to the Speaker, dated Thursday, the 14th of August, 2014, page 1030, paragraph number 11. I want you to understand how people in rural areas obtain their so-called permission to occupy or right to occupy the land. The president said, "My family homestead is located some 24 kilometers south of the Nkandla town center. The land upon which it is situated is owned by the Ingonyama Trust, the legal entity that owns traditional land and is administered by His Majesty King Goodwill Zwelithini Gabelo Zulu. Together with my family, I occupy the land through a certificate issued by the local inkosi or chief termed permission to occupy or right to occupy. In the rural areas, we don't have title deeds, but we are given permission to occupy or right to occupy. And that piece of land that the chief or the inkosi gave to you, you can do whatever you want. It's yours. It doesn't belong to anyone, but it's yours. You can do whatever you want on that land. I thought maybe I should assist you on that one. Then, coming back to the report of the Minister of Police, his report is responding to the recommendations of the previous ARO Committee. Unfortunately, Honorable Mulder, we started together on the first ARO Committee. Then you left me on the second ARO Committee without even entertaining the other report. So that is unfortunate, because we dealt with those issues, and the recommendations were that the public protector is not a security expert. So there is no way that the public protector could have said this is a security or this is not a security feature. The other committee also, we acknowledge that we are not security experts. Hence, we recommended that the minister of police, being the life function minister, responsible for the protection of presidents, deputy presidents, ministers, deputy ministers, they must go to Uganda with the security experts. They are the ones who can tell us, the security experts, which feature is security and which is not security. Fortunately for us, the minister came back with a report. Those features, a fireproof swimming pool, is a security feature. Given the fact that all the houses, the private houses of the president, are aged houses, you can imagine if there could be fire there, what will happen. Then, if we say that fire pool or swimming pool is meant for entertainment purposes, then, or is a recreational facility, then, Honorable Minister, I want to know, why is the swimming pool constructed at the entrance of that homestead? Because from the little knowledge that I have, maybe it's because I'm from the rural areas myself, a swimming pool will be behind the houses or at the corner somewhere. Then, yes, because if I want to swim to put on my swimming costume, I can't do that at the gate or the entrance of my homestead. I can't. I can't. Then, why is that? And also on the issue of the fraud, that the president requested for the extension of the fraud, where is the proof? And why is the family call not extended? If that was the request that the president requested for the extension of the fraud because he had more livestock, why didn't they extend the family cross? Honorable Minister, if you can respond to that. Just be patient with me. I'm still checking my notes. Then, on the, what do we call it, the soil retention wall. The soil retention wall, Honorable Maimane, in my understanding, you know, you always claim that you are from Soweto, no? I'm sure you are from Soweto, right? Yes. Okay, I'm not sure because I don't know where you come from.
Lankure, will you address the chair? I don't know.
Oh, okay. My apologies, Chairperson. Okay. I'm sure you know better what an amphitheater looks like or an entertainment area. You know, a soil retention wall comes in different shapes and designs. We have one at Mpumalanga Mbombela Civic Center. That is what we saw at Nkandla. So that is a soil retention wall. So we didn't see any entertainment area. There is no stage. There is nothing. And we the general explained to us why it was there. And some of us, because we know how we have seen the need for that erection of that of the construction of that soil retention wall. So we understand it's for security purposes, not Jabulani Amphitheater.
No, honourable members, you know, in Parliament there's certain ways in which we engage, and when you want to raise a point, you ask to be recognised. It's not an informal discussion that we're having. We're actually dealing with a very serious matter. Honourable Tlapule?
Thank you, Chairperson, for protecting me. The security experts, the generals, Chairperson, explained to us that what we have identified in the previous ad hoc committee is actually for security reasons. As for the crawl and the chicken runs and the goats and everything, those animals were told that they were removed for to prevent them from interfering with the security features. Then, Chairperson, just to say that the president claims that he didn't know about this thing. The president said he didn't know about this thing. No. It's not true. It's not true. We've been saying this, and we are still going to say it until people understand exactly what the president did. And in an interministerial task team was established to investigate what was happening during the construction of those security upgrades. That is why some of the recommendations by the public protector was taken from the report of the interministerial task team investigation. That is a fact. And also, to blame the president for something that he doesn't know is uncalled for. We cannot say that. Honorable Chairperson, there was an allegation that in the church of the Honorable Maimane, there were drugs found in that church. So, do you want us to believe that the Honorable Member sent people to put, or he knew about those drugs? If Honorable Chairperson, the Honorable Members want us to believe that, then it will create a problem. Because some people will go and plant things in your homestead without you knowing, then someone will say you are accountable for that. No, it can't be. And also, there are processes in place after the investigation of the other actions that the president did. He proclaimed the SIU. There are processes in place that are taking place as we speak. That is why we have people who are charged criminally, civilly, and everyone and everything else. The disciplinary hearings are continuing. So what more do we want? Thank you, Chair.
Now, Honourable Members, I'm just going to allow for a five-minute comfort break, and then we'll be back. Then the Minister will respond to this round of questions. Keeping in mind, Minister, that a lot of these issues, and I need to remind Honourable Members, were raised last Thursday. Right? A lot of these things were raised last Thursday, and it is if sometimes we forget about the presentation in the interaction that we had last week. So the Minister will respond. And then there's an indication from another four members to ask questions, and then we will conclude this part of the meeting before we'll then break for lunch. But just a 5-minute break. There is refreshments outside if honourable members.